Welcome inside CFP today, everybody. Appreciate you being here as always. We're Tuesday, May 21st. I have absolutely no idea how it's May 21st. We've already had a preseason game. I got emails that were saying, hey, here's the post game. Here's the breakdown, the stat report, all the rest. Truth be told, I was just hanging out with my little guy, so I didn't get a chance to actually watch the game as of yet. But Sask 25, Winnipeg 12. That is your final. There you go. Preseason football off and running. Training camps, they seem like they're just blowing past. A couple of stat lines for you. 7-9, Trevor Harris, 78% completion rate, 123 yards, long pass of 65, and didn't end up getting a touchdown pass. Shea Patterson did, 3 of 3, threw a touchdown. It's pretty nice. Antonio Pipkin got into the game, no completions. And then Jack Cohn, 6 of 8 in that first preseason game. On the other side, Chris Streveler, 7 of 8, 65 yards, no touchdowns. Eric Berrier came in, threw a couple of interceptions, so not a great preseason performance there. But spreading it around and everybody getting a little bit of looks, Frankie Hixon had a nice game for the Riders, 7 carries, 33 yards, got into the end zone as well. And then on the pass-catching side of things, man, a bunch of targets going to a ton of dudes just hanging out, being around on the roster. Keen Schaefer-Baker for the Riders, 3 catches on 3 targets, 36 yards. And nice to see him out there running around, looking pretty healthy as well. How about a Joe? Late round pick. Ends up getting into the ball game here. The former Clemson Tiger, 4 catches, 62 yards, and gets himself into the end zone for a touchdown. So that was pretty cool to be able to see after scouting him and going through the combine and the draft process and all that good stuff. But I am not here today to talk to you specifically about all of that. Preseason football, we will have chances to do that. One of the things I wanted to mention in this edition of CFP today was the Guardian caps and some of the highlights of the 2024 health and safety measures. Now, of course, this is a conversation that you could have for hours, and they have throughout the CFL and amongst all the teams in order to reach these new standards. There were a variety of different things that were put in 2023. We've done some of the longer form podcasts on this stuff, but I think a lot of this is pretty, I would say, self-explanatory to people, especially if you're listening to a podcast like this. You likely understand the game of football. You understand some of the changes to these things are done with, of course, player safety being at the heart of it all. The quick summary of this, mandatory mouth guards, essentially saying, hey, protective benefit, dress code amended to include mouth guards, making the CFL the first professional sports league in North America to mandate usage. When I read that headline, my first thought was, the quarterbacks too? Is that going to be a major dress code violation problem? And I'm not saying this as somebody who doesn't want quarterbacks to be safe, or as an ex-quarterback who's thinking, I would never do that, or I'm open-minded to it all. I'm just genuinely wondering that there's some quarterbacks in the CFL that you see with mouth guards that, you know, Zach Collaros will, you know, make a throw and then pop the mouth guard out or whatever. You can see when he's smiling in game, he's got it on. And I would too if I had teeth as nice as Zach Collaros. But there are some quarterbacks who there's too much communication going on at the line of scrimmage. You just don't feel comfortable with it, whatever. Maybe you didn't grow up using it. Some guys use like the liners that are almost like the little rubber bite downs. They're not true mouth guards. Some of them are on the bottom teeth, like almost trays, but they're not actually ones that you would use on your top. And they're certainly not, you know, the two of them at the same time, because that would be incredibly uncomfortable. I can say that with confidence as somebody who's had Invisalign for nearly 2 years. But the mandatory mouth guards, and specifically with quarterbacks, I do find to be kind of interesting. GPS tracking technology permitted during training camps and practices throughout the regular season and playoffs. Devices provide real-time data on player movement, including speed, G-force, location, acceleration, deceleration. Technology will assist with injury prevention, load management, and rehabilitation monitoring. When I saw the word load management in that description, that did concern me slightly, because the science behind this of load management and the fact that something that's a kind of a pet peeve of mine at all times is, well, that guy is injury prone. If we could just manage the load, then, you know, he won't get hurt. I could break my ankle stepping off a sidewalk that I don't see tomorrow. I know it's not a direct comparison, but it is one of those things that anytime I see load management, I go, yes, within reason, absolutely. Do not be Tom Thibodeau and play all of your starters for 48 minutes for the New York Knicks, because they're all going to die. Don't do that. But within reason. Yeah, I'd like to think that everybody's still getting their work working, and there's already been a lot of steps towards making sure that everybody can get their work in, but also do it in a wise way. So the GPS tracking technology should be, I would think, an evolution of that. The injury spotter investments, I'm sure this will be fodder for those who do not believe that the injury spotter at all times grabs the right people, grabs enough people, grabs people that maybe they shouldn't grab. Because sometimes you have somebody who wobbles standing up and it's because there's something wrong with their shoe. And then it looks like, you know, could they be concussed, pull them out of the game. There's other times where I have seen somebody get rocked and I've gone play-by-play and I believe that they should be going and talking to the injury spotter and they don't get pulled out, or they almost don't get pulled out and they're like breaking the huddle and then the game gets blown dead and then the spotter gets in there. And so the fact that they are, in addition to the injury spotter, introducing a new injury spotter assistant role in the CFL Command Center to manage video and communication technologies, maybe that will make things smoother. I would imagine that that is the point, is not to have these awkward, do we, don't we, is one person in charge? Are they handling the communication stuff in order to get the message out to the on-field officials as quickly as possible? It's actually already pretty quick, which is why it feels like sometimes they just need a second or a third look in order to make sure that they're not making the wrong judgment or pulling a player out. I believe Zach always brought him up twice in this podcast, but I believe he got pulled out a couple of years ago, maybe. And it was one of those that you're going, I don't think that there's a need for that, but I think that was one of those Drew Brown games where he came in. So, and then the last one that I'll mention here in this quick little recap of it is, yeah, we got the mandatory mouth guards, got the GPS tracking, got the injury spotter investments by the league. The expanded use of guardian caps. Players are permitted to wear guardian caps. If you're not familiar with these, they're the mushroom-looking things that go over the top of the helmet. If you watched on CFL Plus, we actually had players at the CFL Combine wearing these guardian caps. But they can wear them during all games if they choose to do so, is the wording that's used in this. Use of guardian caps at training camp and contact practices expanded to include defensive backs and receivers. In 2023, the introduction of guardian caps and other measures led to a 42% decrease in training camp concussions. Ongoing research with the University of Victoria regarding the guardian cap and alternative products. Again, player safety, all for it. That is good. This one's going to be hard to sell to the diehard fan when you end up having a player choose to use it and go out there, and maybe they will be a trailblazer. But I think, like most things in and around old school hard-nosed football, people will look at what is almost literally bubble wrap for the brain and go, seriously? And my opinion on this is, if it keeps you safer, if you want to do that, go crazy. I love that the league did this, but I also think there's an element of the National Football League approving this almost exactly same standard that likely forced the CFL's hand into saying, well, we're probably going to have to do the same, because if the NFL is putting out the messaging that says this makes players more protected and it's up to their discretion whether or not to use it, and then if the CFL came out and said, well, we are not going to allow them to use it in game, then the CFL would be actively getting in the way of players being able to protect themselves. And then somebody gets a really bad head injury and comes out and says, well, I would have worn the guardian cap, but it's not allowed by the league in the game. So this, when will we see this? Who will wear this? Which position groups could be most likely to do something like this, to wear these guardian caps? I think those are all interesting questions as the season goes on. My immediate thought on it was, I don't know if anyone else remembers this, Wes Welker as a Bronco, back during the Peyton Manning Broncos era, I believe had gone through a couple of concussions, and he ended up having a custom helmet. You can look it up, like Wes Welker big helmet. It wasn't exactly the same. It wasn't the same size, but it was a comedically large helmet. It was strange. But this is what I really do come back to on this discussion of player safety, and specifically the optics of helmets, is if I were to tell you 20 years ago, some of you older people may be listening to this, 40 years ago, 50 years ago, what football would look like, some of the different things that would be involved, you would not have believed me. And anytime that there is change, if it's change for change's sake, I think people can rightfully get frustrated. If there's change for progress, I think you just have to kind of wait and let it play out. Anytime that people see change and they feel uncomfortable by that change, then typically we just lash out and say, well, I don't like it because I don't understand it and it scares me. There's going to be a lot of people, I think, if you ever start seeing these Guardian caps consistently showing up in CFL football games, that are just going to say, I don't know what that looks like. I've never seen that before. It makes me feel uncomfortable. I hate it. Those are stupid. Do you still know which team is playing? Yes. Do you want to see the players stay on the field more? Yes. All of those things can be true. They can also look super strange and very out of place. And that's what they're going to be unless they became mainstream. Because there's a lot of things in the game of football and really all sports in terms of player safety and protection and health and wellness that if I would have said to you that that was the norm a long time ago, you would have never agreed with that. But they are the norm now. So I don't think this is going to be widespread. I don't think this is going to be consistent. I don't think even necessarily we're going to see it in games this year. I think it's likely a stipulation that was given the option. But I'll tell you what, the first person who decides to wear one of these Guardian caps, you will be remembered. Because forever, if these become mainstream down the road, the Jeopardy trivia question is going to be, this CFL player was the first in league history to wear the all-new Guardian cap. There you go, everybody. Have yourselves a great day. We'll talk to you coming up tomorrow right here on CFP Today as training camps in the preseason roll along ahead of the 2024 CFL season.